He was so pleased he didn't even listen to Puppet Man's whining for just one last taste of Tony's pain.
3 p.m. Although there was a small portion of the carpus remaining, I chose to amputate a few inches farther back on the radius. Dr. Robert Benson's method of delivery was dry in the extreme. No bedside manner at all, thought Tachyon, staring with sick horror at the ungainly lump of bandages swathing his right arm. Perhaps he thinks I can take it, being a physician myself. Well, he's wrong. His arm throbbed in time to the beating of his heart. Tack glanced up at the IV mechanically clicking fluids into his body. They inserted the needle into the big vein on the back of his left hand. Good, they noticed I was right-handed. No, stupid, no right hand to put it in. He gagged. Feeling nauseous, Benson held a basin under his chin. That's natural, the after effects of the anesthesia. I know. How long? What time? Oh, time. A little after 3 on Sunday. So long. Yes, physically, you're very run down, and the massive shock and blood loss. He shrugged. I'm hurting. I'll send in a nurse with another shot. I'm very allergic to codeine. Use morphine or... Doctors make the worst patients, always trying to take over their own treatment. But Benson smiled as he made a notation on the record. Go back to sleep. Tack felt his lower lip trembling. My hand. From what I've seen of the news clips, you're lucky to have gotten off so lightly. Doctor. Benson paused at the door, looked back. Don't tell them. Benson scratched his chin. About the virus, you mean? Yes. I won't. Eyes closed, Tachyon evaluated his condition. The painful throat from the endotracheal tube, an overall sense of disorientation from the anesthesia, a painfully distended bladder, and, overriding all, the thundering pain from his mangled arm. The phantom fingers of his right hand twitched convulsively. If he were at home, he could have a hand regrown in a matter of weeks. But would the wild card virus, now twined lovingly in his DNA, permit a normal growth? Or would it place some horror at the end of his arm? It seemed the final and ultimate irony that he, who had killed his own kin, attempting to prevent the release of the virus, and spent 40 years laboring among its victims as a means of atonement, should be forced to suffer so much. Just manifest and get it over with, he cried aloud. Tears ran hotly into the hair at his temples and matted in his sideburns. The virus maintained its smug silence.
4 p.m. When Jack stepped into Tachyon's hospital room, he saw the red-haired alien writhing on the bed, clutching his stump. Jesus, Jack muttered, and walked fast to the bed. What just happened? I keep reaching for things with my right hand. Limply. Call the nurse. Put your stump in a sling. Help you remember. Yeah. Still cradling his stump. Jack reached for a cigarette and lit up. You want me to call the nurse? Get you a shot? No. Tachyon's mouth was a thin line. Jack blew smoke at him. People think I'm a macho asshole. They haven't dealt with the keys and princes, that's all. He glanced around the room. Has Blaze been here today? I've been sort of looking for him. I want to make sure he's okay. I have not seen him. Worry crossed Tachyon's features. Someone saw him with Jay Aykroyd, that detective guy who zapped that freak away before I could pound him. And saved my life, from all reports, Tachyon pointed out. His left hand touched his stump. If Blaze is unsupervised, he could get into trouble. Precisely my thought. Tachyon's manner turned imperious again. Find my grandchild, Jack. I'll try. Tachyon sat up, pointed with his good hand at the closet. Get my clothes, will you? Jack looked at the alien in surprise. Tack, don't worry, I'll find him. I must go to the convention. Jack laughed nervously. It's all over. You don't have to go anywhere. Tachyon froze, his violet eyes wide. What do you mean? Jack gave a sigh. No one's told you, huh? What happened? Jack hesitated. He didn't want to get into this. He took a long drag of smoke, tried to get it over with fast. Greg and Jesse cut a deal. Jackson withdrew and threw his support to Greg. Greg's got the nomination. Jackson will be Veep. No. Tachyon's eyes dilated in horror. No, no, no! Impatience rattled through Jack's mind. Will you stop worrying about Greg's stability, for heaven's sake? He put this whole deal together. He's on top of things, okay? Even with all these aces gunning after him. No, no, no! A jolt of horror ran through Jack as Tachyon raised his right arm high, then brought his stump smashing down on the railing of his bed. The stump smashed down again and again. Jack dropped his cigarette and grabbed Tack's arms. He wrestled the thrashing alien back to the mattress, held him till he calmed down. What the hell's the matter with you? Tachyon just glared at him. The thought struck Jack with the force of a hurricane. Suddenly, he felt as if he were blown off his feet, whirled away into darkness, carried off somewhere without light, without security, without hope. Greg, right? He said. Greg's the secret ace. Tachyon just looked away. Talk to me, damn it. I cannot. Jack's knees felt as if they wouldn't support him. He lurched backward, groping for a chair, and sat down. His cigarette was smoldering on the floor, and he picked it up, took a long drag. A tentative, fragile calm descended on him. Tell me, Tech, he said. I need to know. I need to know if I fucked up again. Tachyon closed his eyes. It no longer matters, Jack. The one thing I do right, the one thing I do right, in years, and... Jack looked in surprise at the cigarette he had just crushed in his hand. He looked for some place to put it, found none, shrugged, dusted it off onto the floor. Tack, Jack said, I need to know this. I got Greg nominated. Never mind how I did it. I need to know whether I did good or not. Tachyon's eyes were still closed. Jack looked at him in rising anger. Are we going to have to play 20 questions here, Tack? Tachyon said nothing. Is Greg a secret ace? No answer. Sarah Morgenstern accused Greg of being a killer. Is that true? Nothing. The little freak who tried to kill Sarah, does he work for Greg? The last words were a shout. Tachyon just lay there, his eyes closed. Finally, he spoke. Go away. It's over. There's nothing we can do. Rage blazed in Jack's mind. He rose from his chair, lunged over the bed to shout in the alien's face. You're so arrogant, he said. You're such a goddamn prince. You say it's over, so it's over. You say that people should stop supporting Hartman, and you give no reason, but they're supposed to go along with you because you're a Takesian prince, and you know better than anyone else. Has it ever occurred to you that if you just fucking condescended to tell some of us lowly Earth scum about Greg, we might have managed to put the brakes to his campaign without getting Barnett elected? Instead, you just ordered me to deliver California to Jackson and expected me to say, yeah, your lordship, whatever you say. Jack shook his fist in front of Tachyon's closed eyes. Has it ever occurred to you that maybe you can trust a human being now and again? Has it? No answer. Damn you anyway. Tachyon said nothing. Jack turned and bolted the room like a runaway locomotive. His rage fueled his long stride out of the hospital, down the corridor, out into a blazing, humid afternoon that seemed to suck the anger right out of his body. He headed vaguely toward the Omni. He really didn't have anywhere to go. He didn't know what to do about Hartman, and Blaze could be on this particular street as well as anywhere. If only the goddamn alien had trusted us, Jack thought. Then it occurred to him that maybe it was he, Jack, years ago, who had taught Tachyon not to trust anyone, not with anything that mattered. That thought depressed him all the way home.
The speech was set. Protocol for the evening speeches had been set with Devon and Jackson's staff. Greg had called the other candidates personally and asked each of them to join him on the campaign road in their home states. Dukakis and Gore had been politely enthusiastic, congratulating him on the victory and promising their help to unify the party. Only Barnett had been cool, as Greg had expected. To hell with him. We'll take him as a puppet and play with him the next time we meet. Ellen was sleeping. Calderone's latest version of the acceptance speech was in the compact waiting for him. He could hear Colin, the Joker's Secret Service who had replaced Alex James, scuffing his feet outside the room. Greg kissed Ellen, saw her eyes flutter open. "I'm going back to the hotel and meet with Logan and a few others," he whispered. Ellen nodded sleepily. Greg packed the compact into its bag and collected Colin at the door.
"Heading back to the Marriott," Colin said into his walkie-talkie. "Bring the car around to the side entrance. Get some people on the elevators."
On the first floor, Greg heard a familiar voice at the desk.
"Please, mister, listen, they're for the senator's wife."
"Peanut," Puppet Man stirred. "Just a minute, Colin." Greg headed for the lobby, Colin relaying the change of plans to the others. Peanut was holding a rather bedraggled but huge bouquet of flowers, trying to give it to the guard behind the desk. The man shook his head repeatedly, grimacing. "What's the problem, Marvin?" He'd met Marvin while wandering the hospital this morning. Marvin was a slow-moving and lazy security guard, the butt of a dozen jokes Greg had heard over the last few days from the doctors, the nursing staff, and the orderlies. They'd shaken hands in passing. Puppet Man had sensed immediately Marvin's distaste for his job. In fact, there didn't seem much that Marvin liked at all, jokers least of all.
"He wants me to take the flowers up to your wife's room," Marvin growled, pulling at the belt slung underneath the overhang of belly.
Marvin didn't like politicians either, especially Democrats. He eyed Colin's blue-suited athletic figure with contempt.
"Looks like he got him out of some damn trash can, if you ask me."
Peanut was looking forlornly at Greg, the moist eyes trapped in folds of hard, furrowed skin, the flowers drooping in his lone hand. Puppet Man could feel the undiluted admiration swelling from the slow-witted joker, underlaid with a surprisingly deep sorrow for what had happened to Ellen.
"I'm really sorry to cause trouble, Senator," Peanut said. He looked as if he were about to cry, glancing from Greg to Marvin to the impassive gaze of Colin.
"I thought maybe she might like them. I know they ain't much, but..."
"They're very pretty," Greg told him. "You're Peanut, aren't you?" Pride swelled in Peanut at the recognition. He tried to smile, and skin cracked around the mouth. He nodded shyly. Greg held his hand out for the flowers. "Marvin's overdoing his job," he said without looking at the guard. "No one needs protection from compassion and caring." Puppet Man felt Marvin's cold rage at that, and Puppet Man licked at the emotion eagerly, saturating it. "Ellen will be proud to have your flowers, Peanut," Greg continued, holding out his hand. "I'll make sure she gets them. In fact, there's a space at the foot of her bed where she'll see them when she wakes up. I'll tell the nurse to put them there." Peanut handed the flowers to Greg. The Joker's mind was glowing with yellow-white pride, overflowing with azure hero worship.
"Thank you, Senator,"
he blurted out, ducking his head.
"Thank you. You, well, everyone out there loves you. We all know you'll win."
Greg gave the flowers to Colin. He hugged Peanut for a moment, then smiled at Marvin. "I'm sure Marvin will be glad to get you a taxi to wherever you're going. Won't you, Marvin?" Ah, the hatred. Marvin's gaze was daggered. "Sure," he said. "No problem." He bit off the end of each word. "I'll take real good care of him." "Good. Thank you again, Peanut. And thank you from Ellen. She'll love them." He glanced at his watch. "And I really need to be running. Peanut, it was good to see you again. Colin?" They walked away. Puppet Man rode with Marvin. Greg closed his eyes in the back of the limo as they rode to the Marriott, relishing Marvin's fury and Peanut's pain as behind the dumpster in the back of the hospital, the security guard beat the crap out of the Joker. It was a nice little snack.
6 p.m. Spectre had gone to Piedmont Park after leaving the Marriott. He just wandered around, unnoticed, among the jokers. He'd never seen so many happy freaks in all his life. They were singing, and hugging, and kissing each other. Those that could kiss, anyway. They must have been partying all night, since at least half of the crowd had found some shade to take a nap in. If they'd known what he was going to do, or try to do later on, they'd have torn him into 1,000 pieces. He'd eventually gotten bored of it and walked over to Oakland Cemetery. He strolled around among the marble monuments and weathered headstones, reading the inscriptions on them and hoping for inspiration. But none came. He was just killing time, and he knew it. He caught a cab and went to his motel, cleaned up, and took another cab to the hospital. He'd finished off the bottle of whiskey and bought another. He'd had a few slugs from it already, hoping to calm his nerves. He walked up to the main desk and motioned to the woman behind it. She nodded and walked over. She was middle-aged, slightly overweight, and had mousy brown hair and a tight bun. "What room is Dr. Tachyon in?" He flashed her his fake press card. "Can't you leave that poor man alone?" she said, shaking her head. "Sorry, lady. Your job's compassion, mine's the news." Specter put the card away. "You let me know his room number, and I won't try to stop you feeling sorry for him. Fair enough?" 435, she said, lowering her eyes. "Thanks," he said, turning away. "It's in the public interest, believe me." The hospital was so completely different from the one Tony had been in. They might have been on different planets. The walls and floors were spotless. There was almost none of the disinfectant smell you normally got in hospitals, and no stink of jokers at all. There were paintings on the walls, and the woman on the PA system sounded like something from a wet dream. He stopped outside the room, made sure no one was looking, and took another quick slug of whiskey. He shook his arms like an athlete, loosening up, took a deep breath, and stepped inside. What he saw almost made him laugh. Tachyon was facing away from him. He was wearing a blue hospital robe, slit up the back, and his little white ass was showing. He was holding a bedpan with his one good hand, and his prick was dangling over it. Nothing was happening. At the end of his other arm was a gauze-covered stump. Specter couldn't manage to be afraid of this pathetic little thing. He closed the door. The crippled alien didn't even turn to look at him. "Please, just another few minutes. I know I can manage something. Maybe if you run some water for me?"
"Turn it on yourself, Doc."
Tachyon jumped and quickly covered himself.
"But the ideal, have you no shred?"
He turned and saw Specter, then closed his mouth and stared wide-eyed.
"You!"
Specter walked quickly over to the bed and took away the little box used to summon a nurse. "You won't be needing this." Tachyon turned away from Specter and tried to pull himself toward the far corner of the bed. "Careful, you'll pull your IV out." Specter pointed to the tube that ended in a needle in the Tachyon's arm. "I'm here for your help." Tachyon shook his head in horror.
"No, James, you mustn't. I can't allow it."
"Can't fucking allow it?" Specter kept his voice quiet, but there was no concealing the contempt. "If anybody deserves to die, it's Hartman. I need you to mind control some people and get me close. I'll do the rest."
"James, please."
Tachyon still wouldn't meet his eyes.
"I beg you, don't do this. An autopsy is a scandal."
Tachyon gathered himself before continuing. "They would run mad. Hunt down every wild card. Quarantine them." Specter wasn't going to waste his breath arguing. He reached down, grabbed Tachyon's stump, and squeezed. He put a hand over the Takesian's mouth to muffle the scream. Tachyon bit into his palm, drawing blood. Spectre let go. Watch this, Doc. He held his hand in front of Tachyon's face and watched the wound close over.
Ancestors, Tachyon gasped.
Don't know everything about me after all, do you? Now, show some guts for a fucking change. Do the autopsy yourself. Or mind control the people who do. Use your goddamn power for something other than getting little hero-worshipping bitches to suck your alien weenie. Spectre turned Tachyon loose and took a step back. Tachyon shook his head. You don't understand. Need rest. Peace. The little alien seemed on the edge of hysteria.
Only rest will be the peace of the grave.
It was the wrong thing for Tachyon to say, and it pushed Spectre over the edge. He slapped the alien hard, but not as hard as he wanted to. You feel that? Well, that's nothing compared to what I have to live with every minute of every day. For the rest of my life. Spectre leaned in. I killed a little girl once. Just to see her mother's face when she found her. And I thought of you. It was a lie. But Spectre wanted to give the knife as many turns as he could. If you don't help me, there'll be lots more. You owe me, Doc. Christ, what you did to me, you'll owe me forever.
I'm sorry,
Tachyon said, pulling the pillow over his head with his one good hand.
But I can't.
I should have known. Spectre got up and headed for the door, looked at the TV and stopped. Someone was interviewing the Joker Secret Service guy who'd been in Tony's room. Then all those on the podium during Senator Hartman's acceptance speech will be wearing masks? The reporter asking the question was standing as far away from Colin as he could. The Joker cleared his throat.
Yes, those are Senator's wishes. He feels he would make a certain statement to the American public.
You too? The reporter asked.
Yes, I've had occasion to wear them in the past.
Colin looked like he wanted to take the reporter's head off. Old habits die hard, and like most of us, I'm a creature of habit. Tachyon groaned behind him, but Spectre barely noticed. So Tony had sold his boss on the mask idea. A group of masked people on stage was a whole new ballgame. He might not even need the little creep. Spectre walked over and handed him the bedpan. When I'm done with Hartman, I'm coming after you. He heard piss hitting the pan as he left the room. Spectre laughed. Don't say I never did anything for you.
Tack lay on his side, the mangled arm propped on a pile of pillows. There was the strong smell of urine, and the sheets were damp beneath his hip. He had been shaking so hard that he had put most of his load in the bed. He tried to marshal his scattered thoughts. Oh, ideal. James Spectre. The man who could literally kill with a look. I should have mind-controlled him, captured him. But I was scared. He thought of what his father would have said to that admission. It would not have been kind. Princes in the house Ilkazam did not admit to fear. James was going to kill Hartman, and then there would be an autopsy, and then the world would end. Too bad about Troll and Father Squid, and Arachne, and Spots, and Video, and Finn, and Elmo. No, Elmo would miss the backlash against the wild cards. He was going to Attica for a murder he didn't commit, and Tack knew what they did to jokers in Attica. Too bad about all of them. And him, too. Blaze was gone. Jail loomed ahead, for the investigation Hartman had launched would live on after him. Didn't they still execute people for espionage? And I had to become an American citizen. But he would never see jail. Spectre would kill him first. He could always phone the Secret Service, warn them about Spectre, but then Hartman becomes president. But was that so bad? I could monitor him, control him, perhaps. Stupid, he'll only kill me. He's tried already, he won't rest now, until he succeeds. But the wild cards would be safe. No. Too many people knew. Jay and Jack and Hiram, Digger, Sarah, George, and Spectre. Hartman would try to have them all killed, and in self-defense they would speak, and if the backlash would be horrendous now, it would be unimaginable once the man was president. I don't know what to do. I deal. What should I do? Nothing. He was too tired, too miserable, too sick. He closed his eyes and grimly went searching for the anesthesia of sleep. The painkillers lay like a blurring fog across his mind, but the pain ate through them like acid. It's not so bad. It doesn't hurt so bad. It'll be all right. And surprisingly, Tack agreed with the soft voice. He forced open gummy lids and stared up into Josh Davidson's face. Hello. How are you feeling? Better now. I thought everyone had abandoned me. Sometimes people get reminded of the obligations and duties of friendship. Davidson's nose wrinkled at the sour odor of urine. I wet the bed, said Tack, miserable and embarrassed. Then we should get the bed changed. Let me help you. Davidson lowered the rail, got an arm around Tackian's waist, and a grip on the IV unit, and helped him into a chair. Wait, I'll be right back. He returned moments later with a nurse. She stripped and remade the bed. Davidson seemed impatient for her to leave. The door swung shut behind her. The actor seated himself across the small table, reached into his coat pocket, and took out a pocket chess set. I thought we might have a quick game. He palmed a pawn. Of each color, hid them behind his back, then offered two closed fists to Tachyon. Tack started to reach out with his right hand. Both men froze and stared at the gauze-covered stump. Left, Tachyon said. Davidson's fingers uncurled, revealing a black pawn. Here, wait. I'll set it up for you. There was a catch in the actor's mellifluous voice. Davidson opened pawn to king four. They played a few moves in silence. Then Tachyon looked up. The Evans Gambit. That's a very old-fashioned opening, he said, shifting slightly because the vinyl on the chair was sticking to his bare bottom. I had a friend who always used that opening. Oh? No one you would know. What happened to him? I don't know. He's gone now. Long gone, like all the rest. Maybe not, said Davidson. Tack laid the tip of his left forefinger on the knight. You don't want to do that. The bishop would be better, the actor murmured. The alien switched pieces and... David! The IV drip had ripped from his hand as he threw himself on the man opposite him, and his weakness betrayed him. He could not keep his feet. David Harstein caught him beneath the armpits, and they huddled on the floor. The tweed coat was rough against his skin, catching on the stubble that littered his cheeks. He was wailing like a three-year-old, but he couldn't stop. David's hand was softly stroking his curly hair. Hush, it's all right now. And of course it was, because such had been the envoy's power. Oh, David, you've come back to me. Only for a little while, Tack, the Dakesian stiffened. I'm old, Tacky. Someday I'll die. They sat silent for a few moments, and then David shook off the mood and said, Let's get you back to bed. No, this is fine. Talk to me. Tell me everything. Those beautiful, beautiful girls, yours. Yeah, I'm very proud of them. Do they know? Yes, my family's been a pillar for me. I was so bitter when I got out of prison. The government tried to recruit me for their covert ace operations. The mobile mouth twisted. I ran, and David Hartstein died, and Josh Davidson was born. I had a new identity, but all the old hate remained. Then I met Rebecca. She took away the hurt. They've never betrayed me. The man's dark eyes were thoughtful and distant. Jack is... What I mean is he has... It's all right, Jack. Braun and I have found common ground, to quote our vice presidential nominee, and Braun reminded me that maybe we do have an obligation. He paused, considering for a long moment. Last night, when we all thought you were going to die, I realized that just knowing you resided in the same world with me was a strange kind of anchor, a comfort. Rebecca reminded me that, well, that knowing I was alive might be a comfort to you. It is, Tachyon sighed, taking a tighter grip on David's lapel. I've spent 30 years admiring and envying those aces who had the courage to use their powers, Hartstein mused. You had the courage. Yes, but not the wisdom. That is always the problem, is it not? What are you thinking? The envoy asked as he studied that thin, chiseled face. Which is the most important, David? Love, honor, courage, duty. Love, said the actor promptly. Tak patted his cheek. Gentle one. And for you? Honor and duty. I must get to the Omni, David. Will you help me? Tachyon, you're in no condition. I know that. But needs must. Will you tell me why? I cannot. Will you help me? What a question.
7 p.m. Spectre hid behind the bed and hoped what Colin had said about being a creature of habit was true. Hastings's body was still in the shower. You couldn't really smell it until you were in the bathroom. Obviously, the maids had only peeked in while making their rounds, or they would have found it. Spectre checked his watch. It was right at 7 p.m. If the Joker was late or didn't show at all, he'd have to hustle to get over to the convention hall. He'd bought a mask of his own, but was afraid it might not match the others. He heard soft footfalls stop in front of the door. Spectre crouched down behind the bed. The door opened, shut. He heard someone sniffing the air. Spectre stuck his head up. The Joker was reaching for his gun. Spectre made eye contact and pushed hard. Colin's legs folded up underneath him, and he made a strangled little noise. Then he fell over dead. Spectre had tried to make it quick. The brief conversation he'd had with the Joker didn't give him any cause to dislike the guy. He was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. As Spectre kneeled next to the body, he noticed something that he'd missed before. Colin's hair had a pronounced oily sheen. It definitely wasn't hairdressing and more likely was just a byproduct of his being a Joker. Spectre had washed his own hair earlier in the day and it was dry as a bone. He rubbed his hands over the corpse's head, then through his own hair. After repeating the procedure a few times, Spectre's hair had the same look as Colin's. Also, unfortunately, the same litter box smell. Spectre rifled the body. Colin was carrying ID, a gun, an earpiece, and even a mask. Spectre thought back to the beginning of the week in the dusty mask factory. It seemed more like a month. He pulled off the Joker's clothes and then his own. A few minutes later, he was ready. The suit was a little loose and the gun strap tugged uncomfortably at his shoulder, but he'd live with it. He went into the bathroom and put on the mask, then stepped back from the mirror and looked at himself. It was close to perfect. The oily hair really made the difference. He carefully dragged the Joker's body to the shower stall and dumped it on top of Hastings. He wouldn't want to be the maid who finally got to clean the place up.
The vacant hall behind the podium reverberated to a low Richter earthquake. Outside in the basketball court, the crowd was working itself into a final frenzy, with a lot of help from Hartman's little gnomes. The fools, Sarah thought. Her breath ricocheted off the inside of the egret feather mask and rattled in her ears. It's like some kind of fairy tale. They're about to proclaim their new king, and never suspect that behind that smiling mask he's a demon from hell. The stocky man in the blue coveralls with the NBC logo on the right breast and Robo Team block-lettered across the back held up her VIP pass for her approval. It bore a fictitious name and a photograph. In the feeble light drizzling from far away, overhead, she could make out a face framed by white blonde hair. The face wasn't hers. It was a Joker face, the kind calculated to keep even the hardest core ex-Special Forces jock in a Secret Service monkey suit from peeking beneath the mask to make sure the real thing matched the photo. She had read enough Le Carre not to be surprised. George Steele was a high-ranking KGB agent, after all. He would have his resources, and it was obvious this attempt to derail Hartman was no spur-of-the-moment affair. She nodded. He pinned the pass to the front of her white dress. No, he said, stooping to where an NBC minicam lay tipped to its side. Are you certain you want to go through with this? The minicam opened. Its printed circuit guts had been partially scooped out to make room for a compact Heckler & Koch P7 pistol. Dim highlights perched uncertainly on black steel. He picked it up, pinched the slide back to examine the chamber, then jacked around in. You remember what I showed you? The three dots line up with the target sitting on them as if they were a table. The weapon will not fire unless you make sure to switch off the safety here at the side and squeeze the other safety at the back of the grip. She nodded, impatient. I remember. I used to shoot a .22 as a kid. Colt Woodsman. It belonged to my cousin. 9mm does a fair amount of damage but has little shocking power. I suggest you keep firing until the target goes down. Or until the Secret Service boys nail me. She held her hand out. He passed the pistol to her. She slipped it into her white patent leather purse and carefully fastened the clasp. World peace depends upon your going through with this, he said. Her eyes found his and held them. Avenging Andy depends on my going through with this, and Sandra Fallon, and Kahina, and Chrysalis, and me. He stood facing her as if feeling he should say something, and unsure of what. She stood on tiptoe, gently kissed his cheek. He turned and quickly walked away. She watched him go. The poor thing. He thinks he's using me. Funny how naive a spymaster can be.
The feeder hall was virtually deserted. Anyone who could possibly cram into the deep bowl of the Omni was inside, cheering the conclusion of Jackson's vice presidential speech. Tachyon heard the sound of the crowd as a vast, deep-throated roaring. A surging beast, and I'm walking in its maw, he thought. David had gently dressed him, but sliding that mangled arm through the sleeves of shirt and coat had drenched him in cold sweat. While David had talked them past the nurse, Tack had palmed painkillers from the evening medication tray. He had dry swallowed them in the taxi, but they hadn't taken effect yet, and he found he could hardly stand. The agent on the door was eyeing the pair skeptically, the slender, dark older man his arm tightly about the Dakisian's waist, Tak presented his press pass. There's no room in there, Doctor. He eyed Harstein suspiciously. Where's your pass? I don't have one. He's the one who needs to get in. There are no seats available. That's all right. I'll stand. I can't let you. It's a fire hazard. Go over to the Congress Center. You can watch on the big screen TV. Takion fought down a wave of dizziness and nausea, ran a hand across his clammy face, and felt the scratch of stubble against his palm. Please, he whispered, and cuddled his mutilated arm to his chest. I think it would be a very good idea if you let him in, said David softly. How much harm can it do? He's one small man. Yeah, said the guard hesitantly. He left the hospital just to be here for this moment. I know you'd like to help him. Oh, all right. What the hell? Go on in. Takion squeezed Harstein's shoulder hard with his left hand. David, don't disappear again. I'll be waiting.
8 p.m. Spectre was sweating buckets. Getting onto the podium had been no problem. Making himself stay there was. The convention hall was huge, much bigger than he'd imagined, seeing it on TV. Thousands of people, millions if you counted the TV audience, would be looking in his direction. He peered at the lighted network booths and strained to see if he could recognize Connie Chung, or Dan Rather, or what's-his-name from CNN. It kept his mind occupied, enough to keep his feet planted on the stage. Jesse Jackson was speaking, his powerful voice rising and falling in his usual Southern preacher's style. Jackson's nomination as VP was obviously the price Hartman had paid to get him to drop out of the presidential contest. Spectre couldn't see any way to get at Hartman while he was on stage. Better to wait until he was escorting the senator back to his hotel, and let him have it then. He could run off to telephone an ambulance and slip away. Everyone would be too caught up in the moment to miss him. Then it would be back to Jersey, and a little peace and quiet. He just had to bide his time.
It was all my idea. People are saying the campaign came up with it, but the whole thing was my call. Jack gave a theatrical sigh. I was wrong, but it seemed like a good idea at the time. The newscasters were filling time with celebrity interviews. Below the CBS Sky booth, the convention was humming, awaiting the candidate. Half of them seemed to be masked. Jack smiled ruefully into Walter Cronkite's crinkled eyes. It all seemed to fit together, all the wild card violence. And remember, I was attacked twice myself. It all seemed aimed at hindering Senator Hartman's candidacy and promoting the Reverend Barnett's. When I saw Barnett personally, I saw how charismatic he is. With people like the Nur al-Ala in the world, remember, he's another charismatic religious leader who happens to be a wild card. I just jumped to the wrong conclusion. So you are satisfied that there are no wild cards in the Barnett camp? Jack offered a practiced, cynical smile. If they're there, they're well hidden. He laughed, disingenuous. They'd have to be, Walter. Behind Cronkite, a couple dozen video monitors showed the cameras panning the convention. People waved signs, danced, laughed behind their masks. Sweating men in headphones busied themselves over consoles. Cronkite seemed in an easy, conversational mood, hardly the hard-ass reporter right now. Still, his question stung. Do you think you should apologize to the Barnett campaign? Jack gave another patent smile. I already have, Walter. I delivered a personal apology to Fleur Van Rensselaer yesterday afternoon. He tightened a smile, looked into the camera. Take that, Fleur, he thought. So how do you feel now that Greg Hartman has finally won the nomination? Jack stared into the camera and felt his smile freeze. I think, he said carefully, that I messed up a few too many times to feel happy with much of anything, Walter. Cronkite put an over-the-audio speaker in his ear, listened for a moment, then looked up and said, I understand the candidate is about to speak. Thank you, Jack, and we'll switch now to Dan Rather and Bob Schieffer. The red light on the camera went off. The crowd was roaring, cheering, on their feet. Jack wished with all his heart that he could cheer with them.
For a long moment, Tachyon was disoriented. Then he spotted the California banner and he knew where he was. The speaker's podium thrust like the prow of a ship into the crowded hall. On its various tiers and levels stood the great and powerful. Claw-like, his hand closed on a man's shoulder and he forced the reporter aside. "Hey, asshole, watch out!" "Move," Tack snarled and pushed past him, deeper into the crowd, searching for a clear view. "The next president of the United States!" The words finally penetrated Tachyon's haze. "Greg Hartman!" The 15,000 people in the Omni erupted. The band blared out, "Stars and Stripes Forever," cheers, screams, whistles. Balloons floated down to be batted aside by wildly swinging Hartman signs. Tachyon shuddered under the assault of sound and the proximity of so many people. His aching eyes focused on the podium, Greg grinning, waving, linking hands with Jackson, Ellen wan and drawn in the wheelchair at his side, smiling. Suddenly, what had been only a peripheral bit of information penetrated. 80% of the people in the Omni wore masks. What had been a merely hopeless task had now become impossible. There was no way by ships or stars that he could locate James Spector in time to prevent the killing. He wept, while all around him, the crowd screamed.
"The next president of the United States, Greg Hartman!" The crowd went wild out in the Omni. Green and gold Hartman signs waved back and forth as the band played. The nets on the ceiling rained balloons down on the cheering delegates. Puppet Man was nearly in orgasm. The pent-up emotions of the long week were being released in one huge celebration, and the sheer tidal force of it was staggering. Greg took off his clown's mask and stepped forward onto the speaker's platform, raising his arms in victory. They shouted back to him fiercely, the noise almost deafening. He had to shout to Jesse to come forward with him. They clasped hands, raised them, waving to the people, and the cheering redoubled, drowning out the band, making the Omni shake with the thunderous acclamation. It was glorious. It was ecstasy. The ovation went on for long minutes. Greg waved, raised his hands, nodded. He saw Jack Braun up in the CBS booth with Cronkite, pointed and smiled, giving him a thumbs-up salute. He kissed Ellen in a wheelchair at the rear of the podium. He grinned at Devon, at Logan, at everyone. Behind their masks, he knew they were all smiling back at him. "We did it!" The power in him was drunk with the adulation. "It's all ours. Everything!" Greg could only grin helplessly in agreement. All ours. When they finally quieted slightly, he stepped to the podium. He looked up at the packed stands, at the shoulder-to-shoulder mob on the floor. Many of them were in masks, joining with those on the platform. "Thank you. Every last one of you," he said huskily. And they roared again. He raised his hands, the cheering softened. It felt good being able to do that. "This has been the hardest struggle of my life," he continued. "But Ellen and I never gave up hope. We trusted in the judgment of all of you out there, and you haven't let us down." The chant was sweeping across the convention floor. "Hartman, Hartman!" A wave, a torrent, it swept them all up. "Hartman, Hartman!" Greg shook his head in feigned modesty, letting it all wash over him and grinning down at them. "Hartman, Hartman!" And the grin suddenly went frozen on his face. Somehow Mackie was down there in the front ranks of the crowd, grinning like all the rest, a hunchbacked boy man dressed all in black and leather. A chill rattled down Greg's spine. "It's okay," Puppet Man murmured inside his head. "It's okay. I can control him." But Greg shivered, and when he leaned toward the microphones again, his voice had lost some of its enthusiasm.
forging across the floor between delirious delegates in white plastic straw hats with Hartman emblazoned on them. Mackey felt as if he were made of air. He never felt any different when he went insubstantial, phased out. But if he did, this was how he might feel. As if he was just going to diffuse like a cloud at any moment. He hadn't slept last night. Wedged in between a pair of stinking winos on the bus from the New York Port Authority. The business suit pervo, with a taste for the slightly bizarre, who'd picked him up in Times Square, had obviously realized the kind of love he was looking for was expensive to come by in the age of AIDS hysteria. He was carrying quite a roll of cash in his pocket. Even after Mackey had peeled away the blood-stained hundred on the outside, there was more than enough for a plane ticket. But he hadn't dared take a plane. They might be watching the airports for him. He'd let himself be seen 3 times now. Der Mann would be very disappointed. He was up there on the podium now. A tropism of love and contrition drew Mackey to him. He was not supposed to approach Hartman in public. He would not. He just needed the nearness of him. He pushed out from under the array of press boxes, hanging over the packed court like the Death Star. Eel-like, he flowed between shouting men with strange shirt buttons and fat women in pastel dresses, every face shining with sweat and grease and greed for the spoils of the love feast of capitalism. The spectacle would have disgusted and intimidated him had he any room in his mind for thoughts that weren't of Hartman, of love and duty and failure. The podium rose before him like a blue Rhine castle. He didn't see the man yet, but the man on stage was talking about him. He looked to the wings, trying to catch sight of Hartman. White motion took his eye. Tiers of VIP boxes rose either side of the podium, like layers of a wedding cake. A diminutive figure in a white dress was excusing its way past seated dignitaries on the level to the left of and even with the podium. It wore a flamboyant bird mask of white feathers that gleamed like silver under the lights. He started to think, "Filthy choker cunt." Then he realized what had drawn his attention. The way she moved. He could always recognize a person by posture, the way she carried herself, the way her limbs and body acted together. He could always pick his mother, the bitch, out of a mob of St. Pauli whores by her walk. Now he recognized Sarah Morgenstern, who had greater claim on him than any woman since his mother died. Joyous fury bubbling within him, he began to force his way through the mob. He would not fail his man again, or her.
Hartman was speaking. The crowd, chanting his name, would barely let him get a word in edgewise. Jack wandered around the CBS Sky booth and tried to stay out of everyone's way. The monitor showed a crowd going mad. Jack watched and wondered what he could do. He could tell people, but he'd had a chance just now, and he couldn't. He couldn't be the Judas Ace again. He couldn't start a new round of persecutions. He reached for a cigarette, and then he saw the leather boy on one of the monitors. He couldn't mistake the slight, hunchbacked figure, not even behind the mask. The puny body and arrogant, jerky walk was an unmistakable combination. "Hey," Jack said. A surge of adrenaline almost knocked him off his feet. He jumped forward just as the freak walked off camera. "That's the killer," he jabbed a finger at the monitor. "Right here! Where's that camera pointing?" The director looked at him with fury in his eyes. "Will you get... call the Secret Service! That's the chainsaw killer! He's on the convention floor!" "What? Where's that camera pointed, goddammit?" Camera 8, that's on the right side of the podium. Damn! The freak was right under the candidates. Jack looked around frantically. The commentators, deep into their zen, had yet to hear his panicked shouts. Camera 8! This from the director. Pan left and right. Ready 8? Cut 8! Jack jumped up on the desk in front of Cronkite and lashed out with a foot. The safety glass in the front of the sky booth bulged outward, a network of cracks appearing around Jack's foot. A startled Cronkite wheeled back on his desk chair, barking out oaths, sea dog style, as Jack put his foot through the safety glass, then punched out to widen the hole. The beams supporting the Omnicenter ceiling were just in front and overhead. Jack jumped, caught an I-beam with both hands. He moved hand over hand along the beam toward the podium. This was going to take forever. He swung back, forward, pushed himself off, flew from one supporting beam to the next. He'd done this for years on NBC. The old Tarzan reflexes came back without thought. There was sudden commotion. Hartman's speech had been interrupted. He was too late.
As Greg Hartman strode forward through torrents of applause, Sarah deliberately moistened her lips. How confidently he walks. He thinks he's a god. But there were no gods anymore. Just men and women, some with more power than any mortal could safely use. The purse fell open beneath numbed fingers as if of its own accord. She reached a gloved hand inside. The metal and checked rubber of the grip were cool fire, burning her fingers. Andy, she whispered. She drew the pistol, letting her purse dangle from her forearm by one strap. She raised the weapon both-handed.
Mackie was practically running through the close-packed delegates, using cattle-prod buzzes of his elbows to well-padded rumps to clear a path, phasing out when he had to. He'd do Sarah fucking Morgenstern on nationwide TV. Fuck her right straight through the heart with his good right hand. Der Mann would be so proud. He felt pressure in the armpits, and then his feet paddled air as he was hoisted off the floor by the collar of his leather jacket. Not so fucking fast, Joker, a voice grated in his ear. Squirming, he was turned around into a blast of booze and tobacco breath. His captor was a large man in a bone-white jumpsuit, with black hair hanging into his face. It was a strange sort of face. It looked as if it had been busted into its component parts and hastily superglued back together. The nose was a mangled mass, the cheekbones mismatched, and the green eyes burned at different angles.
You better not fuck with me, goddamn you!
Mackie screeched, half blind with fury.
I'm goddamn not a joker! I make the knife!
The big man winced from the shower of angry spittle. You look like Jack the Shit to me, Junior. Now let's you and me and my good right hand go somewhere for a little talk. Nice and private-like. Mackie lashed out with his own right hand. His fingertips touched the knobbed right cheekbone with a noise and smell like a dentist's drill going into a tooth. They slashed through cheek and lip and bone, cutting away half the lower jaw at a slant. Nude teeth grinned at him a millisecond before washing out in a rush of blood. The big man dropped him and clapped both hands to the spurting ruin of his face. Mackie turned back to the podium. A woman with orange-dyed hair stood in his path, her mouth a tunnel right down to her belly. He hacked her out of his way, like an explorer taking a machete to an inconvenient branch.
Der Mann would have to understand. There was no time for subtlety anymore.
She hadn't expected the screams so soon. She was betting her vengeance, since her life was forfeit anyway, that every eye in the Omni would be locked on the podium as Greg began his speech. But no one in the VIP seats nearby showed any sign of being aware of her. The three dots of the sights rose before her eyes like fat white moons seeking auspicious alignment. Peripheral vision betrayed her. There was a commotion amid the Mississippi delegation, right up front of the podium. For all her efforts to see nothing but Hartman and the rising moons, her eyes flicked briefly in that direction. She felt the strength puff from her like air from a burst balloon. He had come. The Leather Kid, slashing a bloody swath through the crowd, straight for her.
Hartman was speaking. Mesmerized, Tachyon watched the movement of the mouth and heard not a word. Overlaid upon the plain, familiar features was another face, bloated, dissipated, evil. Puppet Man leered down at him. Second, he dropped his gaze, stared blankly at his stump. His thoughts chased one another like swirling leaves. Have to stop him. How? Have to do something. What? Must think. Have to stop him. How? 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 Screams cut into the words of the candidate, the cheers of the crowd, thin like a trickle of blood pushing into healthy tissue, spreading now, becoming a hemorrhage. The reporters surrounding Tachyon sensed that something was happening. They began to lurch forward, carrying Tack with them. They came up against a wall of fleeing humanity, delegates, mouths wide with terror, running for the exits. The world narrowed to thrashing arms, the stench of fear. Tachyon's shields reeled under the onslaught of 15,000 people reacting in either terror or confusion. A burly man, the buttons that covered his chest, chattering like castanets, caromed into the tiny alien. Tack screamed, a shrill, tearing sound as the bandages covering his amputation caught on the man's belt buckle, and he was yanked after him. He lost his footing and went down, the bandage tearing free. Feet pounded across Tachyon's back, driving the breath from his chest. He felt his cracked ribs give. A red-hot poker had been driven into his chest, driving deeper with every breath he took. But it was nothing compared to the agony of his arm as terrified humans ran over him, their heels grinding the stump into the floor of the Omni. I'm going to die. Terror lay thick and choking on the back of his tongue. A tiny thread of fury shot through him. No, I am damned if I will die in this humiliating fashion, trampled by hysterical groundlings. It took all his concentration to think through the suffocating blanket of pain. Braun's mind was a familiar glow in the midst of madness. His power lashed out, nestled close like a homing bird, returning to a place of safety. He read the confusion and hesitation in the big ace's mind. Jack, save me. Tack! Help me. Help me. He couldn't hold the contact any longer. With a sigh, he dropped away. But Jack was coming.
A freight train weight smashed into Mackie from behind. It drove his right hand, held like a spearhead at the end of his stiffened arm, right into the chest of a man with a pink shirt and beige tie. Irresistible, the mass forced him onward. Down. His hand exploded out of the man's rib cage in a welter of blood. He hit the floor. His head rebounded off hardwood, and he felt something snap in his chest. Squealing with rage and pain, he put a buzz all over his body. His attacker yowled and rolled away. He jumped to his feet.
You fucker! You fucker! I'll cut your dick off and make you eat it!
He was screaming in German now, but it didn't matter. His hands would do all the talking that mattered. Through a screen of tears, he saw a fist swelling toward his face. Something tugged his mind, an eye blink of doubt, of distraction. Belatedly, he started to phase. The blow caught him on the chin, snapping his head back. And then passed harmlessly through.
Greg had stopped speaking, though with the cheering and chanting, no one seemed to have noticed as yet. Looking down, he saw Carnifex bull his way toward Mackie, making a visible wake in the crowd. Mackey, with some second sense, noticed the ace at the same time and turned, snarling. The hands were buzzing now. Someone next to Mackey screamed and pointed, and then everyone was trying to make space around the hunchback as Carnifex shouted and charged. Puppet Man shouted with him, exultant. Good. The boy's no use anymore. Let Carnifex kill him. Mackey will carve him up, Greg told the power. They're both puppets. We can control this game. It was a strange blend of ecstasy and fear. It tasted so good. Yes, get rid of Mackey. It wasn't going to be easy. Mackey swung, and a line of blood followed, ruining the front of Carnifex's spotless uniform even as the ace swung a fist and knocked Mackey backward off his feet. Already the blinding, pulsing red of pain and terror was swelling in Carnifex's mind. The ace in white was backing up a step, watching Mackey's hands as the kid levered himself off the floor, grinning despite his smashed, ruined mouth. Puppet Man reached out. He found the fear in Carnifex and clamped down on it brutally. Then he reached for Mackey, looking for the switch in that crazed mind that would render him vulnerable. There, Puppet Man said in satisfaction. There! A gunshot sounded in Greg's ear. In that moment, Puppet Man startled with him, losing Mackey for a precious instant as the packed auditorium erupted in horrified screams, as panic and terror drifted through the air like a thick fog. My God, they're killing each other! Someone cried. Stop! Greg shouted into the microphones, but his voice was lost in the uproar.
Have to do it, she realized. Now, before he gets here. She willed into her arms the strength to straighten, to raise the blunt black pistol. Bleeding in terror, a tall, gangly man with gray hair fringing a narrow promontory of skull came boiling out of his chair like a stork frightened from a canebrake. A flying elbow hit the gun and spun it out of Sarah's grasp. She shrieked in despair as it cartwheeled over the front of the box and into the crowd. Gunfire crashed from the podium, and Greg Hartman vanished under a wave of Secret Service suits.
Spectre jumped when something shattered the glass up in the media booth. It froze him for an instant, and agents were already swarming over Hartman and the other bigwheels, pushing them into the wings or knocking them to the floor. He ran several steps toward the senator, but two other men had him face down behind the podium. The screams were deafening. Spectre couldn't think with all the racket. Gunshots, he saw several agents firing toward a target in the crowd. Golden Boy was swinging on the girders overhead toward the area where the men were shooting. Spectre piled on top of Hartman. The senator grunted, but didn't turn over to face him. In a moment or two, he would look over his shoulder, and Spectre would be waiting.
Jack swung from beam to beam like a desperate pendulum. He couldn't tell what was going on up on the platform. He could see Billy Ray's white suit, Secret Service with guns, delegates stampeding. No Hartman, no hunchback. There was just the unmistakable impression of violence being done. He flung himself to a beam above his own California delegation, then stopped. Greg Hartman was the secret ace, a killer. Why should he care what happened to the man? While he hesitated, he heard a scream resonate in his mind. Tachyon was down in the stampede, being trampled. He hesitated again. The cry came again. He saw there was no one directly below him, then dropped.
He danced back. His chin felt as if someone had hit him with a hammer, and his neck muscles groaned. If he'd taken the full force of the blow, it would have snapped his neck. Who is this? His vision cleared. He staggered as if he'd been punched again. It was the black-haired man with the spare parts face, leering at him with his death's head grin. The front of his jumpsuit was red-splashed now, as by a spastic eating spaghetti in red sauce. The blood geyser had dwindled to a trickle.
Show you a thing or two, you little son of a niche!
The big man bellowed. He swung a haymaker at Mackey. Terror yammered in his brain.
I can't beat this monster!
Fighting down the fear, Mackey phased, just ahead of impact that would have pulped his forebrain. The big man's momentum carried him right through him. He recovered with a tiger's quickness, spinning around with his hands coming up to strike or defend. Mackey was right after him, anger overwhelming persistent fear. He aimed a stroke at the temple.
Let's see how he does with his head cut in half.
The big man snapped up a hand in a knife-edge block. Fingers tumbled like clothespins from a sack as Mackey sliced through it. The black-haired man threw himself backward into the crowd, just managing to keep from catching the buzzsaw hand in his skull. His breath tore at the right side of his chest like talons. He must have cracked a rib when that big fucker tackled him. He phased through the curtain wall at the foot of the podium, into the hidden moat that separated the delegates from the stand. From the corner where the square-sectioned column of the podium proper met the facing of the elevated dais, a muscular young man with a wire trailing from one ear gaped at him and hauled a tiny machine pistol from inside his dark suit coat. Mackey met his eyes and grinned, unaware that his nose was bleeding, and his smile a ghastly clown's. The Secret Service man's finger convulsed on the trigger. A spray of 9mm bullets passed through where Mackey wasn't and ripped into the crowd behind. The fresh screams of the shot almost made Mackey come. He cut the Secret Service man's neatly pressed legs out from under him, right below the knee. The agent toppled, shrieking into the moat, leaving blood splashed across the front of the dais and his lower legs standing. Briefly. White ziggurat steps flanked the podium, too large to serve as stairs. Mackey began to clamber up them. A blow from behind sprawled him across the second. Dazed, he felt himself picked up and flung like a doll. He smashed into the outer wall of the moat. He was broken inside.
Mutti, he groaned. Mommy!
It was the black-haired man, who had clubbed him down with his mangled hand and thrown him with the good one, who was snarling at him from the foot of the podium, peeling what lips Mackey had left him back from his teeth, who gathered himself and leapt like a tiger on a staked kid. In desperation, Mackey thrust himself from the wall, bringing up a hand, bringing on that buzz. His hand met resistance. Fluids drenched his face, hot and sticky. The big man crashed through the retaining wall, trailing loops of gut like greasy, purple-gray pennons.
Lying on her stomach on the VIP box's floor, Sarah had a perfect shot at Hartman. He was buried for the moment beneath a pile of Secret Service bodies, but they were concentrating on what was happening in the audience. No one was sparing the dignitaries' seats any attention at all. When they let him up, she'd have him dead to rights. Except she'd lost her gun. She drummed a fist on the floor of the box with a deliberate, self-hating cadence.
Greg had no chance to recover. Two Secret Service people hit him like blitzing linemen, shoving him down on the floor with guttural, wordless yells, their guns out. Colin, the Joker, piled directly on top of him, almost knocking his breath away. "Stay down, Senator!" Puppet Man snarled at the interference. He could still hear the buzzsaw whine of Mackey's hands tangled with the crowd's screams as Carnifex plowed into the boy. But he couldn't see, couldn't pull the strings easily because he didn't know what was happening. "Let me go. Just let me have them. That's the only chance." Greg let loose all hold of Puppet Man, lying there underneath the guards as the power reached out, savage. He mind-raped Carnifex, slicing out the pain and the fear, pumping the adrenaline so high that he could almost feel the ace's heart pounding in his own head. At the same time, he tried to dampen Mackey's insane rage, but that was like handling fire. It burned, it twisted in his grasp. "Smash him!" Puppet Man screamed at Carnifex. Use that damn strength and make the little man another blood spot on the floor. Then he felt Billy scream in agony despite the mind block, and even as he gulped at the pain greedily, he knew Mackie had won this battle. The weight on top of him was gone. Half a dozen of the Secret Service were shouting on the podium as Greg struggled to get up to see again. He's cutting us to pieces! Then there was more gunfire, loud and too close.
With frantic palm strokes, Mackie wiped his opponent's blood from his eyes. The bitch was gone. Damn! 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 He had to find her. He could not fail again. He looked up. Hartman was nowhere in sight. Had something happened to him? Happened to the man? Weeping tears and blood, coughing up bloody snot, he scrambled up. A broken toy on a giant's stairs. Unimpeded, up onto the ramp that gave onto the dais from stage right. Hartman was lying there beneath half a dozen young men in suits. He looked all right. Grateful tears filled Mackie's lower eyelids. He felt a hot breath on his cheek, heard a yell of agony from behind him as the bullet went home. A dark-suited man knelt beside the senator on his knees, pointing a gun at him with both hands. He tried to phase. Doubt and fatigue clamped his mind. I can't! Yellow fire reached for him from the short muzzle. Black fire exploded in his chest. He fell.
Strong arms dragged Specter off Hartman and spun him toward the crowd. He's cutting us to pieces! Get your piece out! We've got to nail him, said the Secret Service man who'd pulled him upright. It was true, a little hunchback was slicing men to pieces with his buzzsaw-like hands. Specter popped the leather restraint and hauled out his gun. What the hell? Might as well look the part. It could help him get free later. Specter kneeled and fired. The gun had more kick than he'd expected, and the bullet took down a man well behind the fight. He steadied his gun hand with his free arm and aimed, then squeezed off three more rounds. The hunchback spun and went down. Specter turned back toward Hartman. Are you all right, Senator? Hartman looked up, and Specter caught his eye.
Darkness pulled at Mackie with seductive arms. He fought it. There was something he had to do. Someone. Terror burst inside him. His eyes came open. He lay spread-eagled across a tier. The dais's facing hid the senator from him. Der Mann needs me! That need gave him strength. He made his limbs respond to his will. Made himself climb, despite the tendency of hands and keds to slip in the red liquid that covered the ledge. Der Mann lay where he had been before, but his neck was craned, and he was staring fixedly up at a tall, gaunt Secret Service agent. His expression seemed both elated and terrified. Hatred for the skinny agent hit Mackie like amphetamines. He's the one who shot me! But worse than that, he was doing something to the senator. Mackie couldn't see what, but he knew. He limped forward. His right foot dragged. Each step sent a white-hot poker through his belly. He needs me. I won't fail him again.
Specter felt something in Hartman resist him for a moment. Then it sucked him in like a whirlpool. His death pain boiled into the senator's mind. Every excruciating detail, the broken bones, the fiery blood, the choking, rushed out. But something was wrong. Hartman's mind wasn't reacting like any of the others. It was bloating, feasting on Specter's death. Spectre pushed harder. Slowly, the other mind gave way under the pressure and began to fade.
So good, so tasty, but it hurts, and it kills. It isn't real. It can't be real. It isn't possible.
But it was. And Puppet Man's voice had faded to a whisper and left completely. And even the pain that leaked into Greg from Puppet Man was like a searing acid poured down his psyche so that he wanted to scream and plead and beg, "Don't kill me! Don't kill me! I don't want to die!" But he couldn't break that awful gaze. Couldn't tear himself away from those strange, sad, pained, startled, hurt eyes. Those eyes that weren't Colin's at all, but someone else's. And he knew that he was going to die. That he would be next. That he would follow Puppet Man into the void behind those eyes.
"You're killing me!" Greg spat with all the strength he had left, hoping that those eyes would blink or look away or turn. And there was nothing left in his world but those eyes.
The dark-clad back loomed ahead of Mackie like a narrow cliff. Mackie swayed. He wanted to lie down and sleep for a long, long time. Instead, he raised his right hand, brought the buzz. He looked at his fingers, a pink blur. The sight gave him strength. He swung his hand in a flat, sweeping cut.
Spectre could barely stay on his feet. His knees wobbled from the strain. He'd given Hartman everything he had and felt him go under. But the son of a bitch was staring at him, blinking. It simply wasn't possible. Spectre remembered the gun in his hand. He centered it on Hartman's chest. He heard a sound like a giant bee and hesitated. He felt a grinding pain in his neck. The convention hall spun over and over, then rushed up and slammed him in the face. His ears were roaring, but none of the sounds seemed to make sense. There was a body lying on the floor not far from him. It was Colin. At least it looked like the Joker. But he didn't have a head. There were ribbons of tattered flesh on the neck, where it had come off. All Spectre could see were rushing feet. It had to be a dream, like the one he'd had before, only worse. He felt sick and paralyzed, but at the same time, strangely euphoric. He'd just close his eyes and bring things back under control.
The head had rolled against the back of the podium. Feeling as if he were drifting on air, Mackie limped toward it through roaring silence. Painfully, he leaned forward. His body felt like a dry twig that broke in a new place with every few degrees he bent. He picked up the head, straightened slowly. He held the head up to show to Greg, to show to the herd of frightened sheep in white hats who trampled one another in their frenzy to flee him.
"I'm Mackie Messa," he croaked. "Mac, the knife, I'm special."
He brought the head to his face, kissed it, full on the lips. The eyes opened.
Spectre felt something on his mouth. He opened his eyes. The hunchback was staring down at him, a mocking smile on his lips. It wasn't a dream. The realization was like a fist in his chest. But he didn't have a chest anymore. The little fucker had sliced his head off. He was going to die. After all he'd lived through, he was going to fucking die. Again. Spectre fought through his panic and locked eyes with the hunchback. He channeled his pain and terror through his eyes and into the man who'd killed him. The world began to shake and blur. Spectre felt the darkness closing in and tried to push it all into the hunchback. A familiar fear crept into Spectre. He felt very alone. The darkness was complete.
Mackie tried to pull his eyes away. The head's eyes held them, with black hole suction. Something was shaking his soul to pieces. His body began to shake in sympathy, vibrating faster and faster, out of control. He felt his blood begin to boil, felt himself sweating steam from every pore. He screamed. The skin on the severed head's cheeks crisped and blackened from the friction of Mackie's fingers. The buzzing fingers met bone, began to shake the skull to pieces, to agitate the fluids within the rounded box of its cranium to the boiling point. But the eyes!
The leather boy exploded. Sarah dropped her head into her arms, felt wet impacts in her hair that would stay with her forever. When she looked again, there was nothing left of hunchback or head but red and black splashes steaming all over the podium. There was a dead moment. Then Greg was pushing aside his blanket of Secret Service agents, struggling to his feet. The crowd had flowed back from the podium like mercury from a fingertip. Now it washed forward again with a roar that went on and on. That's it. He's president now. This guarantees it. The death of his ace assassin was no comfort. President Greg Hartman would have no need of German psychopaths to deal with his opponents. If we even get that far. Steele had hinted that Soviets would launch a first strike rather than see Hartman inaugurated. Her head was a dead weight. She let it drop and let the grief pour out in hopeless tears.
Jack just tossed people out of the way till he found Tachyon, then picked the little man up and stuffed him securely under one arm. Gunshots cracked out. The stampeding crowd accelerated. There was wild but confused violence on the platform. Jack couldn't see a thing. Jack bullied his way through the crowd, parting them like the Red Sea. Finally, he and Tachyon stood in front of the massive white podium, but from his low angle they could see nothing. Whatever had happened seemed to be over. Greg Hartman rose from the crush of Secret Service and brushed himself off as he walked uncertainly to the microphones. "Damn," Jack said. "We're too late."
There were still people shouting and screaming in the hall. There was still panic as they stampeded for the exits or stared at the podium in frozen horror. Yet the impression Greg had was somehow one of silence, of a frozen moment like a still photograph. He could hear his own breath, gasping and very loud in his ears. He could feel very clearly the hands of the Secret Service man on either side of him. He could see Jesse Jackson being herded off the podium, Ellen blockaded by a cordon of uniformed security, dignitaries on the floor or standing with hands to faces or running blindly from the scene. There was more blood and gore than Greg had thought possible, and a strange, echoing void inside his head. Puppet Man? There was no answer. Puppet Man? He queried again. Silence. Only silence. Greg took a shuddering breath. He allowed himself to be hauled to his feet, then shrugged away the restraining hands that wanted to pull him from the podium. Senator, please! Greg shook his head. I'm fine. It's over. And it was very clear what he had to do now. The path was laid out before him. A gift. Puppet Man was gone. and the loss was as if some great dark burden had been lifted from him, a burden he hadn't even been aware that he was carrying. Greg felt good. There was carnage and destruction all around him, and yet, later we'll know. He straightened his jacket, tugged at his tie. He arranged the words in his mind, knowing what he would say. Please be calm. This is what happens when jealousy and hatred are allowed to grow. This is the fruit we receive from the seed of prejudice and ignorance. This is the bitter feast we endure whenever we turn away from suffering. Words to salvage a presidency from ruin. Brave Hartman. Cool Hartman. Compassionate Hartman. Hartman before the eyes of a nation, a calming, competent leader in the midst of crisis. Greg stepped forward to the mics. He looked out to the crowd and raised his hands.
Takyan's left arm was locked about Braun's neck. His right lay across his chest. Blood stained the bandage over the amputated end. The pain from his broken ribs and his arm was so great that he couldn't lift his head from Jack's shoulder as the big ace cradled him in his arms. Jack had returned to his place in the California delegation. The Omni smelled like a slaughterhouse, the air conditioner unable to banish the sickly sweet odor of blood. The sharp scent of gunpowder still hung in the air. The smell of shit from the released bowels of the dead. Shock seemed to hold the entire convention. James Spector was dead. The hunchbacked assassin was dead. But Hartman remained. Takyan gnawed at his lower lip. The candidate broke free of the clinging Secret Service agents. Head back, shoulder squared, hands outstretched in benediction, a gesture of calm or reassurance. He stepped to the microphone, and in that moment, Takyan knew what to do.
Greg began to speak, his gaze searching and pleading with the people in the seats. Please, he began, his voice calm and deep and compelling. And then, Takyan was in his head. The alien, strong, insistent presence took Greg's struggling ego and pushed it backwards, stepping in front of him even as Greg resisted desperately and uselessly. Please, be calm.
Hey, shut the fuck up and listen to me!
His voice shouted without any volition on his own part, echoing throughout the Omni. He saw himself in one of the monitors above the floor, and he was smiling. Smiling that oily practice campaign smile like nothing at all had happened.
Oops, got a little too vehement there, didn't I?
He felt himself giggle, of all things, tittering like a child. Greg tried to stop the laughter, but Takyan was too strong. Like a helpless ventriloquist dummy, he spouted someone else's words.
But you have to admit, you did shut up, didn't you? That's better. Hey! I'm calm. Let's all be calm. No panic in a crisis. Not me. No way. Your next president doesn't panic.
Down on the floor, the exodus had stopped. The delegates were staring at him. His casual, amused delivery was more chilling and horrible than any screaming fit could have been. Above the sobbing and moaning behind him, he heard Connie Chung in the VIP section shout into her mic, "Get the cameras on Hartman now!" Inside, he continued to fight uselessly against the bonds Takyan had placed on his will. So this is what it feels like to be a puppet, he thought.
Let me go, damn you!
But there was no escape. Takyan held the strings, and he was a practiced puppeteer himself. Greg chuckled, glanced back at the carnage, and then shook his head as he turned back to the crowd. He held his arms straight out from his body toward them, his palm down and fingers spread wide.
Look at that, he said. Not even a tremble. Cool as a damn cucumber. So much for the old 76 worries, huh? Maybe this is a good thing in the long run if it puts all that business to rest.
John Worthen and Devon had come forward to pull him away from the mics, and he watched himself flail his arms at them, pushing them away and grabbing at the mics desperately. "Go away! Can't you see I'm just fine? Back off! Let me handle this!" John looked at Devon, who shrugged. Greg tugged his hopelessly soiled suit coat back into position as they let go of him hesitantly. He gave that eerie smile for the cameras once more. "Now what was I saying? Oh, yes," he chuckled again and waggled a finger at the delegates. "This is not acceptable behavior, and I won't have it," he scolded them as if talking to a class of schoolchildren. "We had a little problem up here, but it's over. Let's forget it. In fact," he giggled and bent down to the stage. When he straightened again, his forefinger was dripping with a thick, bright red liquid. "I want you to write, 'No more violence,' 100 times as punishment," he said. And he reached out to the clear acrylic panel in front of the lectern and traced a large, smeary N on it. The first loop of the O was barely legible. "Oops, out of ink," Greg declared gaily and bent down to the stage again. This time he plopped something meaty and unidentifiable down on the lectern with a distinct, wet plop. He dipped his finger into it like a quill pen into an inkwell. Someone was being noisily sick again behind him. There were screams from down on the floor. He could hear Ellen sobbing and pleading with anyone who would listen. "Get him out of there. Please stop him." John and Devon came forward again, and this time they took hold of him firmly, one on each arm. "Hey, you can't do this," Greg sputtered loudly. "I haven't finished yet. You can't." It was over. At least it was over. Tachyon's control dropped from him, and he sagged in their arms, silent. Greg tried not to see the horrified faces he passed as they escorted him backstage. Ellen, Jackson, Amy. He cursed Tachyon, knowing the alien was still there. "Damn you for this. You didn't have to do it this way. You didn't have to humiliate and destroy me like that. Couldn't you see that Puppet Man was dead? Damn you forever."
11 p.m. Tachyon lay in bed. They had wanted to put him back in the hospital, but he had fought that like a maddened creature, and Jack had kept him out of the hands of the doctors. He had allowed them to rebandage his stump, rewrap his ribs, but no more. He had even refused the pain pills, because somewhere in this city was his grandchild, and Tack needed a clear head to find him. His brain seemed to be battering at the confines of his skull as he searched, but only darkness answered him. Pain took him, and he hung over the side of the bed and retched. The memory of those final chaotic minutes at the convention reared up and added to his confusion. Hartman's mind beating like a trapped and terrified animal at the iron confines of Tachyon's mind control. For an instant, remorse gripped him. Then slowly, Tachyon raised the ugly, ungainly stump and studied it. Hate replaced the momentary flicker of regret. "I'll never do surgery again. Damn him to eternal wandering." His jaw set in a stubborn, bitter line, and he crawled from the bed. The Nagivari lay in its case. City light filtered around the edge of the curtain and glimmered on the polished grain of the wood, danced on the strings. Gently, he drew the fingers of his left hand across the strings, releasing a sigh of sound. Rage filled him. Snatching out the violin, Tachyon swung it hard against the wall. The wood splintered with a horrible, brittle sound. Several strings broke with sharp, jarring notes, a musical scream of pain. His final swing pulled him off balance, and Tack instinctively threw out his right hand to catch himself, screamed. Black spots danced before his eyes, and suddenly he felt hands on his shoulders, someone lifting him.
"You damn fool, what now are you doing?" asked Polyakov, depositing him back in the bed.
"Oh, how did you get in?"
"I'm a spy, remember?"
The worst of the agony receded. Tack
touched his upper lip with his tongue, tasting salt. "This isn't very good trade, Kraft," said Tachyon. "We needed to talk." George was rummaging about Tak's discarded clothes until he found the flask. "You could have just left," the alien whimpered, and hated himself for his weakness. "Slipped away to Europe, the Far East. Begun again and left me to face the inharmonious music." Polyakov gulped down brandy. "I owe you too much for that." A tiny, bitter smile touched Tachyon's thin lips. "What? You don't believe in Greg's tragic breakdown?" "I believe that he had a little help." A sigh. "It was damn close." Polyakov grunted. "More exciting that way." Tachyon accepted the flask and took a sip. "You don't like exciting, you like subtle and efficient. George, what are we going to do? Share a cell at Leavenworth?" "What do you want?" "I'm not too proud to beg. Help me. Please. My devil's stepchildren, my grandson. What will become of them if I am incarcerated? Please, please help me." The mattress squeaked and shifted as the man seated himself. "Why should I?" "Because you owe me, remember? We'll probably never see each other again." "I've heard that before, too." The Russian took another swallow of brandy. "How are you going to control Blaze? Make him love me? Oh, George, where has he gone? Where can he be? What if he's hurt and he needs me and I'm not there?" His voice rose shrilly. Polyakov pushed him back against the pillows. "Hysterics won't help." Tak pleated the edge of the sheet, stared with strained eyes into the oblivion of the far wall. "Let me ease your mind on one point. I've already called the FBI and offered to roll over in exchange for your immunity."
"Oh, George, thank you."
His head fell back wearily against the pillows. "Goodbye, George. I would offer to shake hands, but we'll say goodbye the Russian way." Polyakov bear-hugged him and pressed hard kisses onto each thin cheek. Tachyon reciprocated in the Takesian fashion with a kiss to the forehead and lips. The Russian paused at the bedroom door.
"How do you know you can trust me?"
"Because I'm a Takesian and I still believe in honor.
Not much of that around."
"I take it where I can find it."
"Goodbye, Dantzar."
"Goodbye, George."
Chapter 8. Monday, July 25th, 1988. 8 a.m. "You're finished politically," Devon said. His tone was almost jolly. Greg wanted to smash his fucking face in. With Puppet Man, it'd be easy. The Puppet Man's gone. Dead. "I'm not quitting, Charles," Greg retorted. "Have you gone deaf? This is just a goddamn minor setback." "Minor setback? Christ, Greg, how can you say that?" Devon rattled the papers he'd brought. "The editorials are screaming. USA has a poll saying that 82% of the American public thinks you're nuts. ABC and NBC did overnight phone polls showing that you're now trailing Bush by 60%. CBS didn't even bother with that. By their poll, an even 90% of the public thinks you should flat out resign the nomination, as do I." Devon did another turn of the deserted headquarters room. "Jackson's really pissed, even if he's smoothing it over for you," he continued. "The committee wants your resignation in writing this morning. I told them I'd get it." Greg slumped in his chair. The television was replaying his Tachyon's breakdown again. Greg got up and very calmly went to the set. He kicked the picture tube in. Devon raised his eyebrows but didn't say anything. "Fuck the polls," Greg said. He glowered at Devon as glass dribbled from his cuffs. "I don't believe in polls. Hell, let me debate Bush and I'll tear his nuts off. He's about as dynamic as dry toast. That'll turn the polls around." "Bush won't debate you, Greg.
He won't come near a platform with you, and he'll make you look like a fool when you insist. Resign, Greg. Look, Charles, I'm the candidate. Don't you get it? It doesn't matter what you or anyone else thinks. This convention elected me, and by God, I'm running. I've got Jackson. He's charismatic. He'll also pull out of the ticket if you try to continue this charade, Devon sniffed like a prissy English lord. Like Tachyon. You broke down, Greg. America saw you on TV acting like a gibbering fool, and they wonder how you'd react in a crisis in the White House. They don't want your finger on the button, Greg. And frankly, neither do I. Damn it, that wasn't me that broke down, I tell you. It was Tachyon doing it. He took over my mind. I've told you that now 100 times. So you say. You'll have a hell of a time proving it, though, won't you? Frankly, Greg, that's going to sound like just another weak excuse. Or are you claiming Tachyon did it to you in 76, too? God damn you, Greg roared. He pushed Devon with both hands, and the big man rocked backward, a suddenly frightened look on his face. I'm not resigning! Take your hands off me, Greg! Greg looked at Devon. With Puppet Man, I'd make the bastard crawl. He took a deep breath and stepped back. He rubbed his hands on his pants as if they were dirty. I've made up my mind on this, he said softly. Devon stared at him scornfully. Then they'll reconvene the convention whether you like it or not. If you fight, you come out with nothing. You'll be made to look like a total ass. Resign, and maybe you can salvage at least your dignity from this mess. That's my final piece of advice for you, Senator. He stressed the last word mockingly. Greg went over to the couch, picture tube glass crunching under his wingtips. He flung himself down on it. He cursed monotonously to himself. Devon watching silently. When he finally looked up, the words he spat out tasted like ash. I've been hanging on with my damn fingertips, and now you're getting your kicks jumping up and down on them until I let go, aren't you? Well, you get your wish. Tell Tony to write the damn resignation, Greg said. He can write whatever he wants. I don't care. You read it. You'll get the most fucking pleasure out of it. And tell Amy to make arrangements to get me and Ellen out of Atlanta. I don't want to see any reporters. You got it? Devon sniffed. His gaze was scornful and superior, and Greg ached to tear it from his face, but he didn't have the power anymore. Tell them yourself. I don't work for you anymore. Devon shook his head. I had it all for you, and you blew it. I'm going to see if Dukakis can use my talents. Devon left the room with prissy dignity. A Secret Service man stuck his head in, glanced at Greg and the shattered glass on the rug, and shut the door again. Greg sat there alone for a very long time.
9 a.m. Somehow, over the years, he had managed to spend a lot of time in morgues. And no matter how beautifully appointed, how perfectly clean, nothing could hide the essential fact they were freezers for dead human meat. I appreciate you coming down here, the ME was saying as he led Tachyon into the operating room. His eyes slid to Tachyon's stump and quickly away. Especially after. But I've never seen anything like this. And you're the expert. No problem. It's sort of fitting somehow. The ME helped him into gown and mask. They walked to the table. A wan-faced woman was clutching rib cutters to her chest and eyeing the headless body with wary alarm. The corpse had been slit from sternum to groin, the ribs cut and pulled aside. But pale yellow fat was growing across the glistening intestines. The ribs were putting out bony tendrils. Skin had grown across the severed neck, and pooching up from the center of the neck, like a finger thrust into a drum, was a tiny bud. Tachyon bent in for a closer look, fascinated and horrified, and unable to stop himself. It's almost as if it's trying to grow a new head. Yes. Tak jerked back when he realized the embryonic head had eyes. What if they suddenly opened? Would Demise's power remain? Would he make good his threat, even from beyond the grave? Stupid, he's always killed from beyond the grave. Bending, Tachyon slid his dagger from its booth sheath and jabbed it sharply into a buttock. The body arched and jerked. Shit! Screamed the woman, and the Emmy didn't stop running until he reached the door. Clinging to the swinging door, he stuttered, What the fuck is that? A mistake. A major miscalculation on my part. My nemesis and a reminder not to play God. May I suggest that we dispense with the autopsy and move straight to cremation? Great, you'll get no argument from me. What about the ashes? Are there any next of kin? A humorless smile touched Tachyon's lips. I suppose I stand in loco parentis. I'll take them. Doc, you're one weird dude, sighed the woman, and she snipped off a rib that had grown beyond the edge of the chest cavity.
10 a.m. Sarah winced and let the newspaper fall into mud drenched by fire hoses and churned by 1,000 feet of various descriptions. You're right, damn you, she thought, in case Tachyon happened to be listening in. He wouldn't, though. That Takesian honor of his. That damned expedient Takesian honor. He'd laid it right on the line, as straightforwardly as he'd laid her Friday night, and even less gently. You cannot unmask Hartman. It would hand the election to Barnett on a platter. How many innocent Joker lives are you willing to spend on your vengeance? None, she said. A couple of Joker faces looked at her with shell-shock blankness. None of them recognized her. She had a leopard mask on today. It had been lying in a gutter on Peachtree. The riot hadn't mashed it beyond usefulness. Something crunched beneath her foot. She kicked at it until a sign emerged from the mud, hand-lettered at the JADL headquarters tent for last night's demonstration. The message almost made her smile. Judas Jack, 1950. Traitor Tack, 1988. Two of a kind. With Mackie dead, she'd been able to return to her own room. She was dressed today in blue jeans and a loose pale blue blouse. She let her Reeboks carry her past a CBS remote van, where an earnest young black stringer was talking into a yellow foam phallus. Piedmont Park remains virtually deserted after a night of rioting in which 300 Jokers were arrested. Several dozen Jokers wander, as if dazed, among the trampled ruins of the tent city. Atlanta Mayor Andrew Young has rescinded his order that any Jokers found on the street should be arrested on site, following a personal plea in the early hours of this morning by Massachusetts Governor Michael Dukakis. Debate still rages over Governor Harris's refusal to declare martial law. They were few enough, but they were, in a sense, her people. She walked among them for the last time. No Joker would trust her again, and she had sworn on her soul never to reveal the secret that would vindicate her in their eyes. For their sake, she had to let them hate her. For my sake, unless I never planned to pass another mirror with my eyes open. Tom Brokaw spoke to her from a portable television resting on an upturned ice chest and being ignored by a listless black Joker with glowing blue carbuncles covering his face and such of his body as his coveralls left bare. Uneasy truce that prevails between a mixed force of police and aces and several hundred Joker demonstrators outside the Blythe Van Rensselaer Clinic. The camera cut to a sign supported either edge by 6 green sucker-tipped fingers. The Knave of Hearts beats every Joker in the deck. Then it panned to a Joker Sarah knew named Canker, for obvious reasons, with the beleaguered J-Town Clinic for backdrop. Aces are helping the pigs oppress jokers on this street, he told the camera, gesturing at the cordon that kept the protesters at bay. An ace did chrysalis and a joker stands to burn for it. It's us against them. Tachyon, Tachyon, did you know what you were sacrificing? She knew. That was one reason she was willing to burn her own career and reputation at his behest. The other was that she had her vengeance, and nothing else mattered. Puppet Man was dead. That was what Hartman called his power, Tachyon said. Demise had killed it, sucked it right out through Hartman's eyes before Mackie Messer decapitated him. The evil wasn't dead. Oh, no. No matter how much Greg wept, how bitterly he protested his innocence, Puppet Man had been the crystallization of Hartman's lusts. Those lusts still lived. But Greg didn't have the ability to pull strings and make puppets dance to gratify his needs anymore. That was what Demise had destroyed. And Greg would never have the balls to walk the night with a knife in his own hand. Without his power, Greg was trapped in hell. Sarah no longer wished he'd die. Now she hoped he lived a long, long time. She sat on an overturned trash can. Andy, she thought. This is vengeance, isn't it? You wouldn't want me to ruin the life of every wild card in America just to buy you a little more. The spoiled little bitch probably would. But Andrea Whitman was dead now, too. Sarah shook out her winter pale hair, smoothed it back from her face with her hands. A breeze blew across the park, almost cool. She lifted her head and looked out over the morning after battlefield. A black policeman rode around the outskirts of the park on a tall bay gelding. He watched her closely. A pig hunting more victims? A frightened man trying to do his job? It was a judgment call, and Sarah Morgenstern was fresh out of judgments. Victims. Puppet Man's strings were all cut. But Greg Hartman had one more victim left. She stood up and left the park with a sense of purpose that tasted like an alien emotion to one who thought her purpose was all used up. She left the mask in a can that said, "Keep Atlanta beautiful."
Tachyon closed the door to Greg's suite behind him. Greg looked up from the Samsonite suitcase he was packing. "Doctor," he said, "I'm surprised you came so quickly. Amy must have just called you a few minutes ago."
"I suppose I felt I owed it to you."
The alien was holding himself in stiffly, his chin cocked forward over a ruffled lace collar and a paisley electric blue silk shirt. Despite the pose, Tachyon was obviously on the edge of exhaustion. His skin was too pale, the eyes too sunken and hollow, and Greg noticed that he held the stump of his hand behind him.
"I feel no guilt about what I did to you. I would do it again, gladly."
Greg nodded. He closed the suitcase, latched it, locked it.
"I'm picking up Ellen at the hospital in a few hours," he said conversationally.
Setting the luggage down on the floor, he gestured silently to a chair. Tachyon seated himself. The lilac gaze was utterly expressionless.
"Well, let us play it. The final scene in this little drama. But quickly, there are other people I need to see."
Greg tried to stare him down. It was difficult to hold the alien's intense, unblinking gaze.
"You can't say anything, you know. You still can't."
Tachyon grimaced, and his eyes darkened as if in implicit threat.
"No, you won't," Greg said softly. "You tell the press what you know about me, and you prove that Barnett was right all along.
There was a secret ace with his hands on the strings of the government. The wild card virus is something to be feared. The Nats do need to do something to protect themselves from us. You talk, Doctor, and all the old laws will seem like freedom. I know you. I've had 20 years to watch you and learn how you think and how you respond. No, you won't talk. After all, that's why you did what you did last night. Yes, you are quite correct. Tachyon sighed and pressed his stump to his chest, as if it pained him. What I did went against all my principles, some old ones and some newfound ones. It was not something I did lightly or at whim. You are a murderer, and you should pay. He shook his head in weary frustration. And ships should be stars, but they're not, and nothing can ever make them so. What the hell is that? The Takesian version of spilt milk? Greg paced across the room, then whirled to face the alien. Look, you've got to know one thing. I didn't do it, Greg told him. Puppet Man did it. The wild card power. All of it was the wild card, not me. You don't understand what it was like to have him inside. I had to feed him, or he'd destroy me. I'd have given anything to have rid myself of him, and now I have. I can make a fresh start. I can begin again. What? Tachyon's roar interrupted. Yes, Puppet Man's dead. Last night on the podium, Demise took him. Look inside me, Doctor. Tell me what you see. You didn't have to ruin me. The evil was already gone. By the time you took my mind, I was free. Greg studied his hands. A deep sorrow welled up in him, and he looked at Tachyon with eyes that shimmered with moisture. I would have made a fine president, Doctor. Maybe even a great one. Tachyon gazed back with unyielding steel in his gaze. Greg, there is no puppet man. There never was a puppet man. There was only Greg Hartman and his weaknesses, a man who was touched by an alien virus and was provided with a power whereby he could feed the darkest corners of his soul. Your problem is not that you are a wild card, Greg. Your problem is that you are a sadist. This feeble excuse of yours is almost classic guilt transference. You constructed a shadow personality so you could pretend that somehow Greg was still clean and decent. That is a child's trick. That is a child's deception, and you are smarter than that. Tachyon's harsh words were like a slap. Greg flushed, angry that Tachyon would not understand. It was so obvious. It seemed impossible that Tachyon could not tell the difference. But he's dead, Greg cried in desperation. I'll prove it to you. Go on, Greg insisted. I'm asking you to look inside me and tell me what you see. Tachyon sighed. He closed his eyes, opened them. He turned away from Greg, pacing the room silently for a long minute and then coming to a halt near the windows. When he looked at Greg again, it was with a strange sympathy. You see? I told you, Greg said, almost laughing with relief. Puppet Man died last night, and I'm glad. I am so goddamn glad. Greg felt the laughter becoming tinged with hysteria, and he took a deep breath. He looked at Tachyon, who stared at him sternly. Greg raced to say the rest. My God, the words are so fucking inadequate and stupid, but it's true. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for it all, and I'd like to do what I can to start making up for it. Doctor, I've been made to do things that I hated. I lost a son because Gimli used Puppet Man against me. You are not listening to me. There was no Puppet Man, and Gimli died over a year ago. There was no Gimli either. It took several long seconds before the impact of those words sunk into Greg. What? He stuttered. Then the denial came, fierce and desperate and angry. You don't know what the hell you're saying, Doctor. Gimli's body
died, but not his mind. He found his way into my son. He was in my head. He nearly made me lose any control of Puppet Man at all. That's how all this started. He threatened me, said he was going to make Puppet Man destroy me and my career.
Gimli died a year ago, Takien repeated relentlessly. All of him. You made up his ghost yourself, the same way you made up Puppet Man.
You lie!
The word was a shout. Greg's face was distorted with rage. Takion just stared at him coldly. I was in your head, Senator. You have no secrets from me. You are a disassociative personality. You've denied the responsibility for your own actions by creating Puppet Man. And when that threatened to get out of hand, you needed another excuse. Gimli.
No!
Greg shouted again. Yes, Takion insisted. I will tell you once more. There was never a Gimli, never a Puppet Man, just Greg. Everything you did yourself. Hartman shook his head wildly. His gaze was pleading, hurt and vulnerable.
No,
he said softly. Gimli was there. His eyes went suddenly wide and frightened.
I wouldn't have killed my child, Doctor.
You did, Takion said. And he saw in Greg's eyes the deep wounds each word ripped into the man's soul, even though Greg would not admit it. Already Hartman was defiantly forcing himself into a semblance of calm and control. He smoothed his hair back with one hand.
Doctor, I don't know what you want me to do, even assuming that I gave any credence at all to what you're saying.
Get help. Intent on his own words, Hartman almost missed Takion's.
Hmm?
Get help, Greg. Find a therapist. I'll find you a therapist. Suddenly Takion realized how impossible that was. A therapist would have to be told too much, and it would all come out. Somehow, it could all unravel. Takion's face twisted in frustration. He did not like the only answer he could see. We're going to spend a lot of time together, Greg.
What do you mean?
As of now, I am your physician. You are under my care. Greg spat laughter, turning his back on the doctor.
No, he said. No, I don't need a damn shrink because Puppet Man's gone. You're not even human, Doctor. I doubt you're particularly well qualified to act as a psychologist.
Consider it a compromised position. It will guarantee my silence.
I tell you, the power's gone, and the power was at fault.
And we go round again. Admit the truth of what I'm telling you, Greg. You won't even look at me. I saw your guilt, Greg. You can deny, even to yourself, but I know the truth. It's time for you to start facing the reality. Long silence stretched between them. Finally, Greg said,
All right, Doctor. I'll grant you a compromise. Politicians are used to them.
Your silence for my business. I suppose you'll need some paying customers when the funds are cut off. Takion did not dignify the insult with a comment. I will contact you as soon as I return to New York.
Fine,
Hartman sighed. He tried to give that professional smile of his and failed. Walking over to the suitcase, he swung it off the bed.
Well, this is it then. I'm going to pick up Ellen. She's understandably confused and hurt by all of this.
The self-conscious smile flashed again.
I'm going to tell her I'm sorry, too. Goodbye for now. And I guess I'll be seeing you soon.
Hartman thrust out his hand to Takion. Takion stared in bitter disbelief at the proffered hand. He wondered if this was not some final cruel joke of Greg's.
Hey, all's forgiven. Let's shake and make up buddies again. But I can't shake, you bastard. You saw to that.
Hartman suddenly realized what he'd done and yanked back his hand. He didn't say anything. He went to the door and opened it. They left the room together. Walk with me to the elevators? Asked Hartman. No. I'll be calling for that appointment then. Tachyon watched him walk away. A soft, overweight man with a pale white scalp like wings where the hair had receded. He had always thought of Greg as a dynamic, handsome man. Now he realized that that too had been a function of his power. Was I wrong to speak the truth about his power? Perhaps it would have been better to simply let him believe in his possession by Puppet Man and Gimli. No. He escaped punishment. I am not going to let him escape the guilt. But for all intents and purposes, Puppet Man was dead. Now it was up to Tachyon to keep it that way, which meant he had to remain close to Greg Hartman. The thought was nauseating. The alien walked to the stairwell, sat down on the concrete step, and leaned his head against the cold metal handrail. His arm was throbbing again, claws of pain that seemed to rip up his arm and into his shoulder. This might very well be the place where Jack had died, he thought wearily. And right down there, Greg killed his own child. I am dead too, but nobody's realized it yet because I'm still walking around. 8 days in July. 8 days in which to lose so much. His oldest friendship on Earth, his belief and respect in Greg Hartman, the love and respect of his jokers, his hand, his innocence. But Jack hadn't died, and he wasn't dead yet either. Stop feeling sorry for yourself, Tiz, and get on with the business of living. But I have to deal with Hartman, his mind wailed. Tough. Someday after he's dead and buried, you can present a paper on him at the AMA. He began to climb the stairs.
11 a.m. I don't need it! Stop being such a royal asshole, your Takesian Excellency. Jack unfolded the chair and placed it by Tachyon's hotel bed. I've managed all morning without you or that damned wheelchair. Yeah, and look at you. You look like something the cat threw up. You should be out looking for Blaze, Tachyon said. He was propped up on pillows, suffering whitely. Jack sighed. The police are looking for him. The FBI has been alerted. Even that fatuous jerk Straight Arrow is poking around. What can I do that they can't? Tachyon's face was haunted. His one hand clutched the bed covers. I must find my grandson. I must. He's all I have left. Jack sat on the room chair and reached for a cigarette. The police say he was with that Popinjay guy, that Jay Aykroyd, at the hospital Saturday night after your operation. They were watching the TV in the waiting room. One of the nurses remembers that something on the TV caught their attention, and that Popinjay turned to Blaze and said, "You want to go play detective?" Or words to that effect. Ideal. Tachyon bit his lip. If Popinjay has involved my grandchild in one of his intrigues. The police are trying to find out what channel they were tuned to. Jack shook his head. I wasn't any help there either. I was partying Saturday night. Depression invaded them. I thought the right candidate had got the nomination. I have been trying to phone Hiram, Tachyon said. I thought he might have seen Blaze, but he's vanished too. He left yesterday morning. No, he didn't. I inquired and he hasn't checked out of the hotel. I saw him in the lobby. He was carrying a trunk. Tachyon frowned. Jay and Hiram are the closest of friends. If Aykroyd were in trouble, Hiram would be the person to whom he would turn. Tack dropped into a thoughtful silence. Since they're all missing, they aren't going to be very much help to us. What you need is some rest. Tachyon leaned back against the pillows. You are right. He closed his eyes. Perhaps I should try again to detect Blaze's mind signature. Would you please turn out the lights? It might help my concentration. Almost inaudibly, he added, I am weary. So very weary. Will it disturb you if I have a belt of bourbon? Not at all. Jack turned out the light, leaving only the trickle of sunlight coming in under the drapes, and then he carried his cigarette in the direction of the bottles on Tachyon's table. He put some ice in a glass, then reached in the near darkness for one of the bottles. It turned out to be James Spector's ashes. He put the urn down and picked up another bottle. It seemed to have liquid of the right color. He poured. Scotch. Damn. It was sure one of those days.
It all felt very strange. Greg didn't know the Secret Service guards who rode with him in the rented limo on the way to Ellen's hospital. Their faces were unfamiliar, and they didn't speak to him. They were strangers, hidden and masked by dark glasses and dark blue suits and dark frowns. They would always be strangers. Their minds were locked away, and Greg no longer had the key to open them. It felt very strange to be so silent in his own head, to be unable to sense the tidal flow of feelings around him, to find it impossible to swim in the bright salt ocean of emotion, to be powerless to change its swift currents. This must be what it's like to go suddenly blind or deaf or mute. Then, Puppet Man? He mind called again, and again there was only the echo of his own thoughts. Dead. Gone. Greg sighed, feeling lost and sad and hopeful all at once. Looking at the people around him, touching him, and yet isolated. Apart. He didn't know if he'd ever get used to that. All he wanted to do was get away from the furnace of Atlanta, to go back home and be alone and think, to see if he could heal some of the wounds and begin again. It wasn't my fault. Not really. It was Puppet Man, and he's dead. That should be punishment enough. Greg didn't know exactly what he was going to say to Ellen. She at least had tried to comfort him yesterday. She at least had said that it was okay, that it didn't matter, that it would all be all right again. But behind the words, he knew she wanted to know why, and he didn't know how to explain it. Part of him ached to simply let the horrible, awful truth spill out and beg forgiveness. Ellen cared for him. He knew that from Puppet Man. He had seen her love given to him even without the power's help. Yes. He'd give her a part of the truth, at least. He'd tell her that, yes, he was an ace, that he'd abused his abilities to enhance his own power, that he'd manipulated people, yes, even her, but not all of it. Some of it couldn't be said. Not the death and the pain and the violence, not what he'd done to her and their own child. Not that, because then there'd be no hope at all. Ellen was the one thing Greg could salvage from this wreckage. Ellen was the only person who would help him find a path. Greg needed her. He knew just how desperate that need was from the churning in his stomach and the cold fear in his gut. Senator, we're here. They were at the side entrance of the hospital. The Secret Service riding in back with him pushed open the doors. Heat and sunshine hit Greg like a fist as he got out, blinking behind his sunglasses. He leaned back into the cool, leather-scented interior to speak to the chauffeur. We'll be back in a few minutes, he told him. We're just going to get Ellen and her things. Senator, one of the bodyguards outside said, isn't that her? Greg straightened to see Ellen being wheeled out of the hospital behind a clot of reporters, her own Secret Service personnel keeping back the flurry of video cams and cameras. Greg frowned, puzzled. The heat rippling up from the blacktop went cold. Behind Ellen, he could see Sarah. She was standing inside, her face pressed against the glass doors. No, Greg whispered. He half ran to Ellen, the Secret Service men pushing a path through the reporters around her. He saw her bag sitting alongside the wheelchair. She stood as he approached. Greg smiled for the cameras and tried to ignore the specter of Sarah just a few feet away. Darling, he said to her, did Amy call? Ellen looked into his face and his voice trailed off. Her examination of him was long and intense. Then she looked away. Her mouth was a straight, tight line. Her dark eyes were stern and solemn, and a bitter loathing lurked behind them. I don't know if it's all true, what Sarah said, Ellen husked out. I don't know, but I can see something in you, Greg. I only wish I'd seen it years ago. She was crying now, oblivious or uncaring of the reporters circled around them. Damn you, Greg. Damn you forever for what you did. Her hand lashed out unexpectedly. The slap jerked Greg's head around and brought tears of pain to his own eyes. He fingered the crimson flush on his cheek, stunned. He could hear the cameras and the excited buzz of the reporters. Ellen, please, he began, but she wasn't listening. I need time, Greg. I need to be away from you. She took her bag and strode past him toward a waiting car. Behind the glass doors, Sarah snagged Greg's eyes as his hand dropped from his burning face. Bastard, she mouthed silently and turned away. Ellen, Greg wheeled around, the image of Sarah's accusation staying with him. Ellen! She wouldn't look back. The driver placed her bag in the trunk. Her guards held the door open for her. With Puppet Man, Greg could have made her stop. He could have had her run back into his arms in a glorious, happy reconciliation. With Puppet Man, he could have written a happy ending. Ellen got into the car and slumped back against the seat. They drove away.
12 noon. The maitre d' was waiting in vain for his C-note. The hotel had emptied out, and the Bellomondo was no longer crowded. Jack had brought Tachyon to lunch, but he couldn't make him eat. Half a sole filet was abandoned on the plate. Jack finished off his New York cut. Eat, eat, my child, as my mom used to say in German. I'm not hungry. Build up your strength. Tack glared at him. Of the two of us, he said, which one is the doctor? Which one of us is the patient? Tackin's answer was stony silence. Jack took a drink. Bourbon, at last. Tachyon's violet eyes softened. I'm sorry, Jack. My anxiety has rubbed away my manners. That's okay. I owe you my thanks. For this. For trying to find Blaze. I only wish I could find him. Jack put his elbows on the table and sighed. I'd like something good to come out of everything we've been through. There might be something. A George Bush presidency, that's for sure. Jack stared at his plate. That's the last political activity you're going to see from me. Every time I try to change the world, everything goes into the crapper. Tachyon shook his head. I have no thoughts to comfort you, Jack. All I did was screw up. I even died, for God's sake. And the one thing I did right, I did for the wrong man. He took another drink. I guess I'm about as confused as I've ever been. Hell, another drink. At least I'm rich. In this world, you can always fall back on money. Jack leaned back against the cushion. Maybe I'll write my memoirs, get it all down. Then I'll maybe know what it means, if anything. Memoirs, he thought. God, was he already that old? When Jet Boy died, he'd been 22 and looking younger. He hadn't aged since then. At least he'd seen a few things. Been a movie star. Changed the world, back before the roof fell in. Saved a lot of lives in Korea. And that was after he'd become a world-class fuck-up. He'd even seen the Jolson story. As good a place as any, he reflected, to start his memoirs. When Jet Boy died, I was watching the Jolson story. No one said anything for a long while. Jack realized that Tachyon had drowsed off. He paid the tab, then pushed the wheelchair out of the restaurant and headed for the elevators. On the way, Jack saw the man who'd been selling gliders in the mall, table folded and his merchandise in a pair of paper sacks, talking to a friend. Jack parked the chair, then bought the entire line. When he came back, carrying his gliders, he saw that Tachyon was awake. He held up the gliders. For Blaze, he said. When we find him. Bless you, Jack. For the first time in a week, Jack got on an elevator right away. He pressed Tachyon's floor, and the surge of vertigo as the glass elevator took off almost took him off his feet. To keep his mind off heights, he began assembling a glider. A foam Earl Sanderson looked sternly at him from behind his flying goggles. Jack wondered dimly if, even after all these years, he had anything at all to say to Earl. Besides an apology, of course. Better start with the basics. The elevator lurched, and Jack's stomach lurched with it. The doors opened, and with a shock, Jack saw David Harstein step into the elevator. Tachyon was rolling a guilty white-rimmed eye at him. Jack had a feeling his own face held the same expression of stupid, overdone innocence. "You know," Tachyon said. "You know," Jack replied. "Hey, we all know," corrected David with a hearty bonhomie. The glass box lurched for the sky. Jack's stomach lurched with it. He could feel the sweat popping out on his forehead. He searched for something to say. The elevator slammed to a stop again. The door opened, and Fleur van Rensselaer stepped aboard, looking over her shoulder and waving goodbye to a friend. The door closed, and Fleur turned. Everyone stopped breathing for a long moment. The elevator staggered upward. Suddenly, Tachyon lashed out with his right arm, striking the stop button with his bandaged stump. The alien let out an animal-like howl of pain. David knelt quickly by the wheelchair as the elevator jerked to a halt. "Hush, it doesn't hurt." And of course it didn't, or at least it didn't matter. Tachyon blinked hard to clear the moisture from his eyes. "David Harstein," said Fleur, her voice expressionless.
Tach felt a chill go through him. "Just now I remembered from when I was little," Fleur gave a thin smile. "The man who lost China to the Reds. And all these years, you've just been hiding under that beard." Smiling again, she turned to Jack. "An old friend of the family," she said scornfully. The big ace yanked out a handkerchief and mopped his brow. "It seemed like a good idea at the time," he said weakly. The glider of Earl Sanderson held limp, forgotten in Jack's hand. Tachyon reached out and took it. He laid it gently in his lap. "I count myself in nothing else so happy," David said, "as in a soul remembering my good friends." Tach looked up at him. "Yes, all the ghosts have gathered." Fleur stared hollow-eyed at Tachyon. "I am not my mother." "You have your father's eyes," David said, his voice gentle. It was a simple statement, no accusation, no hidden meaning. It left her confused, uncertain, the belligerence draining out of her. "You don't know me," Fleur whispered. "No," David said, sadly. For a moment, Fleur looked like she wanted to hug him. In fact, Tachyon wanted to hug him. Silence spun like cobwebs between the four of them. Fleur stared into David's compassionate dark eyes. Tears welled up and spilled slowly down her cheeks. But the fear came back. She pressed her hands against her cheeks and backed away. "No, don't do this to me," Tachyon sighed. "We must speak, Fleur." "I'm going to scream." Her voice was a frightened thread. "Please don't," David said. "You have nothing to be afraid of." Fleur quieted, but still managed to say, "No, I do have something to be afraid of. I'm alone with all of you." "Are we so fearsome?" David asked. "An old actor, a one-handed man." He glanced back at Jack. "And a weenie." "Hey," Jack began, but then he paused and rubbed his jaw thoughtfully, as he considered and then acknowledged the truth of Harstein's words. Fleur hugged her elbows. "You don't understand. You honestly don't understand, do you?" The three men stared at her. "You stand there with these powers that can hurt us and twist us, and you wonder why we're afraid?" Jack looked with some confusion at the glider in Tack's hand. He spoke slowly, reaching hard for each word. "I think Earl would say you can't be afraid of people just because they're different. Because you can never draw a clear line. Do you fear them because they've got the wild card, or because they have different beliefs, or because they have the wrong color skin?" "I fear them because they can hurt me," Fleur insisted. "There are a lot of people who can hurt you," Jack said, "and very few of them have the wild card." "Easy to say when you're one of those who do," Fleur replied. "You know what you call the rest of us, the gnats, naturals.
That's what it's supposed to be short for, but there's another meaning. Gnats. Little insects. Little bothersome insects waiting to be swatted by you. We're supposed to obey the laws and treat you nicely, but those same laws don't apply to you. You don't have to be nice to gnats, not with all your power.
Fleur, said David, you have all the power here. You hold my life in your hands. Fleur hesitated a long time, looking at him. The wailing of the alarm was like an ice pick in the brain. You don't have to worry, she said at last. You're safe from me. David nodded, as if he'd known that all along. Start the elevator, he said quietly. Tachyon slewed around awkwardly and hit the button. The elevator shuddered and shot upward. Not to throw cold water on this love feast, Jack said to David, but you do remember Mao? Mao Zedong? Chinese guy? Sooner or later, we've got to let her off this elevator, and then she's going to blow the whistle. That is her right. That shook Tachyon out of the dream state, which seemed to hold him. No. David turned those dark eyes on him. Yes, gently. I knew the risks. I've paid the price before. I'm prepared to pay again. They reached her floor. The doors opened. She stepped out. Fleur, Jack Braun said, think twice before you start naming names. I didn't. I'm still paying for it. Fleur looked at them all for a long time. Tack wondered what she was thinking. Easy enough to find out. Better that he didn't. She walked off without saying a word. The door shut. Tachyon stared at the flashing numbers. We must be crazy to let her walk off like that, Jack said. You have to take a gamble on someone sometime, David replied. She's her father's daughter, Jack said. Tachyon stirred in his wheelchair and handed the Earl Sanderson glider back to Jack. And her mother's, too. The elevator, with its cargo of ghosts and survivors, continued its lunge for the sky.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Wildcard 6, Ace in the Hole, edited by George R.R. Martin. This program was directed by Fred Sanders, executive producer Janet Stark. Text copyright 1989 by George R.R. Martin and the Wildcard Trust. Production copyright 2017, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.